You're listening to a Davenport After Dark podcast. Tune in every Thursday night at 10 o'clock on News Talk 106 to 108.
It's January, so for many it's the season to go off the drink after the excesses of Christmas. And if you're staying dry for the month, or even if you're not, then you might be interested in hearing what Mark Abrahams has to say. He's the editor of the Annals of Improbable Research, and tonight he's going to tell us about exactly what happens to us when we drink. And alcohol, or at least the non-consumption of it, is the subject of this week's story. 88 years ago today, on January 17th, 1920, the US passed the 18th Amendment to the Constitution, which made the sale and transport of intoxicating liquors illegal throughout the country. So the story of Prohibition, and it's a pretty fascinating one, is coming up at around 10:30. In the second hour, Stephen Benedict, the man in the red velvet chair, takes a look at the Coen brothers' No Country for Old Men, which came out this week in 2007. And, of course, Kat Hurtline is in the hot seat for All About Sex. She's going to answer all of your sex-related questions after the news at 11. So, if you do have a question for Kat, anything at all that's related to whatever, sex and sexual matters, you can text her on 53106 at a cost of 30 cent. No names, no judgment, just sound advice. Besides our text number, you can also call us on 1-890-453-106. You can find us on Facebook, or you can find me on Twitter at Fionn Davenport. And first, though, the future looks pretty bleak for HMV. News that it was going into administration was quickly followed by the closure of the flagship store in Grafton Street and the announcement that the administrators were bringing in the receivers, which is all bad news for its 300 Irish employees and music fans who see the shop's closure as bad news for the music business. But is this the harbinger of things to come, or a sign of things that have happened long ago? And to talk a little more about this, I'm joined by Steve O'Berube of Berube Communications and the former general manager of Tower Records Ireland, and also Colm O'Hare of Hot Press Magazine. Gentlemen, you're very welcome.
Hello.
Colm, perhaps start with you. The what's happened to HMV... regrettable, not final, we'll say that. Yeah. It's not looking good, but
no.
it's been on the cards for not just months, for years.
It's been coming down the tracks for several years. When it started, who knows? I mean, all the experts and the commentators have their own opinions on what they should have done 10 years ago, and they should have gone online and become an Amazon type outlet, which would have meant that they wouldn't be what they are, which is a high street retail outlet selling physical product.
I've noticed changes, you know, as I've bought a lot of music over the years as a DJ. And what HMV did, I noticed in the last few years, is they essentially stopped relying on music. They moved their music downstairs. They relied on T-shirts, DVDs, Blu-ray, Beats by Dr. Dre headphones, anything but physical music.
Computer games and music books as well. Yeah, I mean, that started quite a long time ago, and most record shops have been doing that for a long time. I mean, there are any number of theories as to why something like the failure of HMV has happened. I mean,
rent in Grafton Street.
Well, the high market, well, that's definitely one part of it. I mean, the high rents and the high local authority fees, I mean, they're horrendous. I mean, not just in Dublin, but I mean, in London, you have the congestion fees and the parking charges and you know, the out-of-town kind of shopping centres. But the big one is the online shopping and the downloading. Now, they're two separate things. I mean, for example, in the UK, they still sold 70 million CDs.
HMV
last year. No, in total.
Oh, sorry. Physical, actual CDs sold out of
shops. Only 30 million were downloaded. So, I mean, you know, they still sell twice as many, or more than twice as many, physical copies of an album than downloads. The singles market's different. I mean, the singles market is almost total downloads, you know, a tiny 0.something%, 0.3% are bought in singles. But singles aren't available physically anyway, so that's gone, long gone. But, I mean, my take on it is that there will always be a market for a physical product, musical product, or DVD or Blu-ray. It'll just be a lot less. It's been declining, you know, year on year for the last 8-9 years. But I mean, the download, the legal download hasn't really taken up the slack there. I mean, whether it's illegal downloading or people just not buying stuff or swapping stuff and file sharing. There will be a market. It'll settle at some stage in the future, near future, at who knows, maybe 20%, 10% of the market. I mean, vinyl, there's been a resurgence over the last few years, and that's quite strong. Now, it's still very, very small from a very small base, but it is increasing each year. So, you know, you can still buy that stuff on Amazon or buy it online, but, you know, people like to browse in record shops. Some of the independent shops in the UK say they're doing better. I mean, Rough Trade have a big store in London, and their business is up 8%. So somebody is buying physical CDs.
Steve, following on what the point Colm is making, is there a kind of a bitter irony here? Should HMV close down? Is this, it's bad news for fans of HMV, it's very bad news for the staff of HMV, but is it good news for independent record shops who then remain the kind of the last man standing in on the high street?
Well, you got to look at the history, the bigger picture of things. Don't forget, HMV started off in the 1920s selling household goods, radios, and gramophones, and in the early part of the, you know, when the industry started selling music hall records, which, don't forget, were the alternative sort of the source of popular culture back in those days. And you can do kind of a quick history of the megastore. I think the issue here is more of the megastore kind of model in terms of music. Music is so fine, you know, it's sort of so minute now that you don't need these big bloated megastores. Yeah. Now, I'm saying that, the issue, there's two issues here. It's the loss of jobs. It's the loss of, you know, a brand, I suppose. I remember Tower Records in my day. The same thing happened to them. And they were the world's largest independent retailer in America and globally. And back in 2006, they went into liquidation. Now, I think that was the start of the slippery slope. It was only a matter of time before that model. But don't forget, you had high street rents. And megastores also were under pressure to fill that space.
Because was there an element that the megastore, in order to be called a megastore, had to occupy prime real estate location?
Exactly.
It couldn't be hidden away, kind of out of sight. It had to be right in the middle and generally in the most expensive parts of town.
Yeah, it was a lifestyle thing as well. Yeah. And you had to be seen. And of course, HMV, I sent the template with Oxford Street when they opened. I'm sure somebody will Google. I'm guessing 1920s, 30s.
21, I think, was the opening date. Yeah.
But anyway, that was the mark of the megastore. The Tower took that another step forward. I mean, when Tower started by a fellow called Russ Solomon, I mean, he was a teenager in the 1940s. He was into his, you know, bebop jazz, which at the time, again, it was an alternative kind of popular culture. And then he started off in his father's pharmacy. In the corner as a teenager selling tapes of gigs he recorded locally in Sacramento, California. Yeah. And of course...
But Tower has always had, as far as I can tell, always had a slightly more independent-minded spirit than HMV.
True.
Well, certainly in my lifetime, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we could argue. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when those megastores, they're fairly recent in this country. It was around 86,
Virgin.
87 when HMV, followed closely by Virgin.
Yeah.
Our Price then turned up, and Golden Disc, who are the Irish kind of, you know, store, expanded at the same time. So the music market was huge, even in the teeth of the 1980s recession. Those days are gone. That's not going to happen again. I mean, Virgin had that huge store down, the old McBurney's and Aston Key. That's long gone. I mean, you know, they're gone a good 10 years, if not more. So... it's not going to go back to those days.
Yeah, but, the issue here really is the megastore culture. The reason why this is news is because it's music. The music retailer, people wanting the music, that crosses all the population.
Sure.
Every demographic buys music. So it touches everybody. So this is news. The megastore, as we know it, it's well beyond a sell-by date. Don't forget, you have to buy, you know, stock deep catalogs to fill all that big space. And don't forget, the record shops had to, you know, pay the bills at the end of the
sure.
month.
Sure, no, absolutely.
And for stock that, quite honestly, would shift maybe one or twice a year, and at the end of the month, you have to pay the bill for anyway. So these big megastores for years survived on huge credit with the banks. And this is why, as we're seeing, it started with Tower in America. That credit all of a sudden was getting smaller and smaller and smaller because of the economies. And this is really the crux of the problem. Why we're,
so,
it's the bloated
megastore. Okay, let me see if I'm reading this correctly.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is, rather than just simply being a narrative of the digital music revolution has taken place, digital music won.
Yes.
You know, cloud downloading is the winner. The physical copy is gone. That it's really more, it's the megastore model as a commercial entity. That's the one that's being replaced.
Yes.
So independent record shops, independent CD shops, those kind of things will still flourish.
They will still flourish. There'll always be a need or a market for music. That goes back to day one in history.
Yeah, whether it's online or offline.
Is how it goes from artist to the punter. And we can do a big, long history lesson here and all the changes over the years, but we won't go there.
But
let's go forward now.
Well,
back in the day, it was all about big, big, big. You had your big CD racks or your vinyl racks. You showed it off. It was lifestyle. Big stereo systems, giant speakers. It was all that was part of the lifestyle. And now it's all our music is on technology. The technology is now so small that a generation of kids don't have the same romanticism, let's say, someone our age.
And that's the point I wanted to make to you. Is I wanted to ask you about this. There's a kind of a twin track here. 10 years ago, HMV was being pilloried all over the place as the corporate shill that is destroying independent record stores. You know, it's this faceless entity, and the staff in there didn't know the difference between, you know, Cream and Fleetwood Mac, you know, whatever. And then the second part of it is that you had, when the advent of the CD, which was seen, of course, as a technological advancement, oh, all the vinyl, or like, oh my God, the purity of music is dead, you know. And so, and now, it, and I'm not, now I'm listening to a lot of younger people decrying, oh, HMV, it was like my spiritual home, it's the place where I learned. So, and it's so strange. It seems as though, like, is it like nostalgia has a built-in forgetter?
Oh, big time, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a dinosaur. I do still have the big stereo and the big collection at home, and I still like to buy CDs. If only for one reason, that MP3s are very poor quality-wise. I mean, the sound is only about sort of 10% of what's on a CD.
But sure, they said that about vinyl versus CD.
They said all sorts of things, but I mean, lots of things, you know. What I'm saying is a fact that, MP3 is heavily compressed, yes, version of the CD. And whether the vinyl versus CD is a different debate altogether. We could be all night here. We won't go there. But,
no.
I am that dinosaur, and I recognise that. But there are enough of us around, I think, to sustain, you know, a niche market physical product.
But if you're 20 years old, and since the moment you started buying music, whether it's online or in the store, it's all been in, let's say, all you know really, or 70% of your music experience has been MP3.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
you don't care.
You don't care.
You don't care. No, that's
your generation.
True.
And that to
that's
you
a generational
is,
thing.
And in 10 years, 15 years time, when the market changes again, or you're probably people were remembering
things
the
can change quite quickly. I mean, you know, Bewley's is still in Grafton Street. You know, they were in trouble 20, 30 years ago. I mean, cinemas, you know, from the 50s onwards, when TV came out, and then videos and, you know, Blu-ray and DVD, cinemas are still thriving. There is another issue that is, it's not a level playing field. There are tax issues around
there
some
is,
of the various
yeah.
online suppliers. And, you know, there are all sorts of, you know, companies set up in Jersey. If that playing field was levelled, maybe the business model that HMV operated under would be more successful. Maybe the online wouldn't be so cheap. Now, that might increase piracy, but I mean, who knows? But in some ways, it's not a fair game out there.
Just reading, there's been an awful lot of statements being made by a variety of Irish musicians, everyone from Brezzy to Julie Feeney and a host of others, who have all decried the potential loss of HMV. They're all expressing a sadness. Do you think that the closure of a physical music shop like HMV will affect the Irish music industry to the point, you know, because are they selling a lot of CDs really out of these shops, or is most of their earnings coming from touring, playing gigs and selling CDs at their gigs?
Well, there's a combination of everything, really.
Okay.
There's no set system on where the revenue streams are coming from, because I'm on the other side of the fence now. And managing bands and promoting and all that. So I see, you know, we're exploring all those revenues. You know, a lot of independent artists I work with now, we totally rely on downloads, you know, for revenue streams. Obviously, selling at gigs is a big one. The megastore experience, I mean, you look at the megastores today, the music product is sort of in the basement.
Yeah, that's
it's
what, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
It's down the side. I mean, but the key word here is convenience. Because I mean, I remember when the CD changeover, I was in retail back in the day when LPs were replaced by CDs, and we were all thinking, great, we can get four times more titles. Titles is the key word. Titles in that same space. Four CDs could fit in that same space. Oh, great. Now, don't forget all these megastores. So you're buying more product, four times as more product on these megastores to fill the space, because these are the rents, because, you know, the vinyl was quite a big product. But then that means you're four times more product. You're spending four times more money to get that product in that wasn't shifting as fast as it was coming in. So ultimately, that's where we are today in these big mega stores. That's why it's dying. They couldn't catch the cash flow. The credits dried up. And, you know, it's gone.
Colin,
the mega store today is gone.
Let's take a band like U2, whose success is assured. They don't need to sell any more records and they can retire happily.
Yeah,
would they today make? Where would the bulk of their record sale money come from? Downloads or physical sales?
Had they been starting out today, there wouldn't be a band like U2 probably today. There isn't. It's one of those industry conversations that keeps happening. Could there be another U2? And they're often described as the last band of their kind. That, you know, it took three albums for them to become successful. The first two albums weren't huge successes. They had great critical acclaim and they built up a live following, and that was very important to them. But record companies aren't going to allow that to happen now. I mean, you know, there's Coldplay and there's Adele and singers like that. You know, I don't think there could be another U2. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I think the music market is much more fragmented. I mean, back in the 60s, everyone bought the new Stones record and the new Beatles record. And even Dusty Springfield was bought by, you know, rock fans. There was no, that big fragmentation between, or gulf between rock and pop didn't exist. But that's not the way it is now. It's much more fragmented. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah.
Cash revenue, the cash, back in the old days, your basic artist would have had a three-album deal to start off with. The first two albums were written off as lost leaders to build up the profile and sell it. Those are gone, and that's part of the aspect as well.
And do you think that all of these are tied into the same thing, like the megastore suffering the difficulties that it's suffering, digital? Do you think that it's all part of the same development or the same problem, depending on the perspective you have?
It's down to convenience, really. Getting back to that. I mean, right now, I'm actually a fan of the whole music streaming. Now, Colin would disagree with me on this.
Just because something's convenient doesn't mean it's any good or better. I mean, a shower is more convenient than a bath. You're not going to tell me a shower is nicer than a bath. You know, a takeaway is more convenient than a home-cooked meal. But, you know, I know which is the nicest.
I know where you're coming from.
And I have this argument all the time with people of my own age. And sometimes, what's amazing is that people of my age, my vintage and yours, are some of the people who've embraced the whole digital world much more than, say, younger people. I mean, if the backlash is going to come, it's probably going to come from a 20-year-old who doesn't like the sound of MP3s, not a 55-year-old who likes the convenience.
But this goes back then to the point we were making earlier on. Yeah. So if the megastore model is dead,
yes,
then the small independent record store that offers a niche product, but not just that, and very particular experience of purchasing, that then you think will thrive and survive?
That should survive. Well, give it time. It will eventually, because the music industry is quite resilient. It will, it will evolve and find its fate. And there's a generation of kids coming in with the technological background to, you know, we don't know what's coming up next. No one saw blank tapes coming into the marketplace in the 60s. You know, something new will come along. And I'm guessing the same as well. Now, and I mean, you know, boutique the shops was definitely thrive. I hope so, because I've got independent artists who need that type of thing.
Sure.
To survive, you know, as a part of a revenue stream.
All right, okay. And in the meantime, I just hasten to add, I hope that the staff who are sitting in at the moment actually do get the money that they're owed, because
and I think HMV will be around in this time next year. It may be a slim down form. I don't think the brand will disappear. I just can't see that happening.
Don't worry, HMV started off selling household goods, evolved into selling music. That's the whole point. These business models evolve into what the marketplace is.
I think they'll be around this time next year.
So whatever the music marketplace will be, hopefully the people in place will figure it out quickly and resolve it.
And we'll leave you with a text from David in BlackRock, who makes the salient point. He reckons we're all dinosaurs debating the music industry future. He says, you have to think of renting. No one complains about renting the TV channels from Sky or UPC. The future is renting music, Spotify, Rhapsody. The model has changed. The retail landscape is forever changed. There is no way back. Nostalgia is fine, but commercial reality wins. I'm 50 years old and rented music for the last 8 years, including my family consumption, and it cost me $150 a year. Remember, music was originally in paper sheets. Time to move on.
Exactly. And you can't take it with you when you're gone.
There you go. All right. And on that note, Steve Baroub of Baroub Communications and former manager of Terror Records Ireland, Colm O'Hare of Hot Press, thanks very much for joining us.
That was a Davenport After Dark podcast, live every Thursday night at 10 p.m. on News Talk 106 to 108 FM.